tonight on Arena. Tina, the documentary on Tina Turner and Ammonite, starring Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan, among the movies up for review. And a closer look at the Dublin Literary Awards shortlist. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. To film reviews first this evening, and we spoke to Kellyanne Byrne earlier this week about the new Tina Turner documentary. Tonight, our film reviewers will give us their verdict. We'll also look at another documentary that gives us a dog's eye view of the streets of Istanbul. Stray is the title of that film. Memories of My Father looks at the life of the Colombian professor and campaigner, actor Abad Gomez. And we'll start tonight, however, with Ammonite, which sees Kate Winslet play a pioneering paleontologist in this 19th century romance. Joining me this evening, Angela Flannery and John Maguire. Angela, the characters here are real, but this isn't a biopic. We're not getting straightforward biography. Tell us a bit, first of all, about Kate Winslet's character, Mary Anning.
That's right, Sean. Mary Anning was a paleontologist, a self-taught paleontologist in Dorset in the 1840s. She was of a family of 10 children, only two survived. And her father died quite young. He had taught her and her younger brother how to scavenge along the shoreline in Lyme Regis for fossils, because that's part of Britain's Jurassic shoreline. And they started, you know, scaling cliffs and, you know, digging at high tide and all of this, looking for these fossils, and, you know, became really quite adept at identifying them for people who had no education whatsoever. But it was very fashionable at the time, you know, for the well-to-do to come to Dorset and along the coast. And these were curiosities that they collected, fossils and seashells. And so the Anning family opened a kind of stall selling them. Now, all of this is historically accurate. Her father dies and she is left to look after her ailing mother. And so that's portrayed quite accurately in this film.
So that part of the story, as we're told, is pretty much close to the historical fact. Another real-life character here, John, is Charlotte Murchison, as played by Saoirse Ronan. This relationship and this part of the story is more fictionalized. How come the Mary Anning character ends up, as she does, looking after Charlotte Murchison in this film?
Well, a rich man named Murchison, played by James McArdle, pays Mary Anning for a guided tour of the coastline, which was very fashionable at the time. He's a want-to-be paleontologist, even though the word paleontology, the science of paleontology, was really in its infancy. But he comes from the Royal Geological Society down to Lyme Regis for a walk around and brings his wife, Charlotte, played by Saoirse Ronan, with him. She's kind of reached the end of this marriage because he's a bit of a he's a significant bully and he's very domineering, and she has not taken well to the treatment that she's received. He hatches a plan to leave her with Mary Anning to bring a bit of colour back to her cheeks for walks on the beach and bracing dips in the ice cold sea. And the two of them form a friendship. Once he departs, the two of them form a friendship, which very quickly then blossoms into a romantic affair, and they become lovers.
All
and
right,
that
let's
part
let's
of the story is.
I'll come back to the lovers part of the story and how that develops. So let's listen to them early on in the relationship. The friendship really beginning to blossom here. Mary and Charlotte, they're cleaning a large fossil that Charlotte has found, in fact, and that gives them an opportunity to talk about Mary's big find. Kate Winslet playing Mary, Saoirse Ronan playing Charlotte.
That one was special. I was only 11 years old. Days it took to dig it out, clean it.
I'd like to see it.
It's in the British Museum, with its fancy made-up name, Ichthyosaurus. We couldn't keep it. It was years' worth of food, rent, and clothing. Such a poor drawing. Child's hand.
I like it. I'm pleased my rock was worth the work.
Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan there in a scene from Ammonite, one of our four films, in fact, up for review this evening. Angela Flannery and John Maguire are reviewers. We started to talk about how the relationship develops from there, Angela, and a lot of the there's been a lot of talk around this film, in particular the portrayal of Mary Anning as a lesbian and the subsequent lesbian, the same-sex affair and relationship that builds between her and Charlotte.
That's right, yeah. The director and writer, Frances Lee, has come in for criticism, you know, for superimposing this romance story on these two women. And, you know, nothing's known, actually, about Mary Anning's romantic or sexual life. And the point that he makes in responding to that criticism is, well, why wouldn't she or shouldn't she be a lesbian? Why do we assume that historical figures are heterosexual? And, you know, I think that's a very reasonable question to ask. Maybe she was gay, maybe she wasn't. This isn't a film that's claiming to be a biopic in terms of her relationships. And... you know, I was quite happy to go along with it because it's a really beautiful love story. It really is. Like, it swept me away and was utterly believable as a love story. And it made no difference whether it was a man or a woman in the romantic sense. It did make a difference in other points that he was making. And I actually thought that it gave him more freedom as a filmmaker to get into things like class, for example, to get into sexism, how, you know, women were expected to fulfill a certain role and nothing else. Mary Anning can't be a member of any scientific society because she's a woman. She wouldn't have been able to anyway because of her class. But even Charlotte Murchison, you know, she's very well off, but she's by no means an emancipated woman. I don't think he would have been able to make those points had it been a man that Mary Anning had the relationship with. And also, to be quite frank, I would have felt as though they were shoehorning a romance in if it was a male romantic lead, rather than focusing on her work as a paleontologist, which I found absolutely fascinating.
And they also, and I know when I spoke to the director, he told me, would you make the same point if it was a heterosexual scene? The very intimate relationship between the two women portrayed by Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan in the film, Angela.
Yeah, it is very intimate, but I mean, you know, it's realistic. I mean, there was no way gratuitous. I mean, it's really beautiful. It's so beautifully shot. You know, this film is a piece of art, and it's not, you know, it's not the greater part of the film. I mean, people will be watching this in the beginning, and for the first hour, you know, you're basically going around scavenging on a beach looking for fossils with this woman and going through shells. I mean, it's not at all a rock. I mean, if you'd be disappointed and turn it off if that's what you were turning it on for, and for titillation.
Yeah, and also John Francis Lee, when he spoke to me, told me about that the pains that Kate Winslet went to find out about how to actually fossil and spend time on the beach with all the mud and all the rain and all the wetness that would be involved in that. And that was a fascinating aspect of things too. But for all of that, John, I think you felt that there was something lacking in this film. What was lacking?
Well, for me, Lee, as he did with his previous film, is
God's
really
Own Country.
A humanist. God's Own Country. And he's really a humanist. And like Angela was saying, it absolutely doesn't matter. We're used to seeing in historical period dramas and biopics heterosexual characters who we have no idea of whether they fell into bed with one another or not. And we're used to seeing that. So that wasn't the issue. The issue for me was how this romance that develops between them benefits both women. But the middle part of the film is almost silent and deeply gloomy. And while Lee makes brilliant choices in refusing to put this soppy romantic gloss on the love these women share, his suggestion that the passion that they have can blind each other to a true understanding of themselves, particularly in the end of the film, just as easily as it can open their eyes to one another. That's a really complex and really clever, dramatic notion, but it's too much for the film to handle. For me, I thought the film was kind of cold almost and chilly, and the turbulent emotions that are being expressed here really don't match the treatment that Lee has given it.
I'll take stars from you to finish, John, and I'll come back to Angela with another question. Stars from you, John?
But three for me, because they're two wonderful, wonderful actors. It's the film itself lets them down, I think. It's a little too staid and inert for what they're doing.
I don't think you're in the same camp as that for sure, Angela, but I'll get you to expand a bit further on how what you thought about the centre performances as well.
Yeah, look, the performances are wonderful. I mean, and particularly Kate Winslet. Saoirse Ronan's excellent. She always plays that delicate upper-class young lady, you know, with such ease and is completely believable. And actually, I thought that Gemma Jones, who would have been in the previous film we were talking about as well, also played a mother in that. She was wonderful.
Oh, the mother
Molly
was gorgeous.
Annie.
Yeah, brilliant.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Brilliant.
Exceptional, so ghoulish. It's a very gothic film. And the silences, I have to wholeheartedly agree or disagree with John about them. I thought they were mesmerising because you have almost non-verbal characters. And what came in there was the sound design. That's what I adored about this film. I just thought it was so inventive. I mean, all of this, you know, walking on pebble beaches, the roar of the sea, the wind, the fire, the candles guttering. The sound design was absolutely exquisite to the point where after I heard it, I felt so, or after I was watching it, I was closing my eyes listening to it. And I just felt so hourly stimulated afterwards. For about an hour, I was really conscious of what I was doing. And then I thought, I'll look up who this sound designer is. And he's a guy called Johnny Byrne or Burns. And lo and behold, didn't he make the Guinness Surfer ad all those years ago? And I thought, there you go.
Yeah. I think that your stars are going to be very different, Angela.
Yeah, five. I adored it.
All right, five. You adored it. Ammonite, our first of our four films up for review then this evening. Let's move on then to Tina, a documentary that retells and perhaps rebalances the legendary performer's very difficult personal story. Angela, the story here, fairly well known, I suppose, at this stage. Is this documentary bringing something new to Tina Turner's, you know, difficulties through the Ike Turner relationship and then rise out into being an independent woman and artist in her own right?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's a few things that it brings to it. First of all, you know, Tina herself is there and I was kind of going, oh yeah, where is she and what's she doing? So now she's 81, though this would have been filmed, I don't know, 18 months ago. So she's, you know, on the cusp of turning 80. So it was really interesting to see her, and she's such a dignified, you know, older lady and very gracious and softly spoken and not really what you think of when you think of Tina Turner. And so, you know, you get to see her and, you know, how she's looking, how she's sounding. She's had an awful lot of health problems. I found that interesting. But there is a lot of new material in there and an awful lot of it is audio material again. So what they are transcripts. So they're tapes, basically, of, I think, her biographer, Kurt Loder, who wrote the 1986 biography, I, Tina, with her. You know, they use an awful lot of the recordings of her back then in her interviews with him, and also the recordings of the original People magazine interview that she would have given in 1981 when she blew the lid off her marriage to Ike Turner and, you know, came out and said, look, I was a victim of domestic abuse, sexual, psychological, emotional abuse for 16 years that, you know, well, we all know that that's where...
Yes.
What happened after that interview. So there was the transcripts of that. But the rest of it, there was an awful lot of archive, you know, that you've already seen in it. And it was very traditional kind of talking heads, just, you know, with cutaways of archive. And but yes, there was new stuff too.
Let's listen to one of those archive clips then, a section from the film where Tina is discussing her decision to leave Ike Turner from an archive interview.
It was something that came over me, like, this is it, you know, the door is open, I'm out of here.
Tell me the circumstances. I mean, how did you actually leave?
We were driving to the airport. I was wearing like a white suit, and I was eating chocolate candy. He handed me chocolate candy, and it was melting, you know, and I went, ah, that's hot. And he hit me.
Okay.
I just looked at him. Because then it's like you look with dagger eyes, you know, it's like, all right. And he was really getting mad. So we got in the car. We were going to the Dallas Hilton. And he gave me a backhand look just like that. I was pissed this time. It wasn't about fear, like, uh-oh, I'm going to get it. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm fighting back today. That was my attitude. So I pointed my finger in his face and said, I'm not going to take your licks anymore. From that, it just sort of kind of started. And I started hitting back. And I didn't cry once, and I cursed back, and I yelled. And he says, this motherfucker's never talked to me like this before. You know, that's right. I am now, because I knew I was gone. I was flying.
I didn't know how. I knew that that was it.
Clip there from Tina, documentary on Tina Turner, and second of our films up for review this evening. John, Angela was beginning to touch on the idea that this is a fairly straightforward, traditional style documentary. It's not breaking any ground when it comes to documentary style.
That's precisely right, Sean. It's traditional, but that doesn't make it any less powerful. And for me, that's the archive that the directors Lindsay and Martin have put together of little scene concert footage from the 60s and 70s. She was an electrifying live performer, and that's the other shot in the arm that we all need right now, is to get a glimpse of her at the peak of her powers, and that distinguishes it. But the interview, like Angela said, it's that present day interview with her in her Swiss chateau on Lake Zurich, complete with the life-sized horse sculptures hanging from the ceiling, where she's lived for 40 years and she's married to a Swiss man. That interview, that present-day interview, is really very candid. She lays it all out. She has nothing to hide. And although this is, like you were saying, material that has been gone over, they've made a film about it, What's Love Got to Do With It, back in 1993. This is a story that we know,
yeah.
But I hadn't heard her tell it like this before. And I found it in the era that we're living in, the era of Me Too, her story is more relevant than ever. She spoke out about the violent ordeal that her marriage to Ike Turner became at a time when very few women in the public eye did. But it's in this film, it's her refusal to allow herself to be defined as a victim.
Yeah.
And it's how the strength and perseverance that she found, how she funneled that into her solo career, that's what gives the film its strength.
Yeah, and you mentioned,
really responded to that.
Yeah, and as you say, you've both mentioned the fact that we have both the archive material and the contemporary interview, which gives us a different angle on things. Let's listen to something from the contemporary side of that interview. And here she is reflecting on how she feels about Ike Turner now.
For a long time, I did hate Ike. I have to say that. But then after he died, I really realized that he was a sick person. He was an ill person. And so he did get me started. And he was good to me in the beginning. So I have some good thoughts. Maybe it was a good thing that I met him. That I don't know. It hurts to have to remember those times. But at a certain stage, forgiveness takes over. Forgiving means not to hold on. You let it go because it only hurts you. Not forgiving, you suffer. Because you think about it over and over again. And for what? I had an abusive life. There's no other way to tell the story. It's a reality. It's a truth. That's what you've got. So you have to accept it.
Lesson in forgiveness there from Tina Turner in the documentary. Tina, just before we finish up on this one, Angela, you're both quite taken, I think, by certain aspects of it, but it is quite long and we get performances in absolute full. Did we need all of that?
Well, I think the fans definitely would have wanted that, but I did feel, again, you know, I often say this is 20 minutes too long, but then, you know, it's kind of like when DJs cut off a song on the radio, the fans go crazy. So
yeah,
maybe that's what they're thinking.
It.
You can't, yeah, you can't possibly get away with doing this, but I mean, there are kind of stages sets that feel like they go on for 7 minutes, and that is just too much,
right.
You know. But look, I didn't expect to enjoy this or find it as moving, and actually made me quite angry a lot of the time. I don't have, you know, didn't, even though she's a sense of forgiveness, I found myself fuming that she had to go to court just
right.
to keep her own name after he took everything from her. So, you know, you do, it definitely. You know, I was quite emotional watching it. I thought it was excellent.
Very moving. So stars from you, Angela.
Unmissable if you're a Tina Turner fan. For me, 3.5, edging towards 4 stars because it's so conventional in
okay.
its construction.
And just from stars from you, John?
Four for me, Sean. I just to watch her in the red leather miniskirt and the hair, the electric hair, jumping around on stage. The power in that was worth
right.
it all.
Okay.
4 stars. Yeah.
Tina, the title of the documentary, and it will be available from March the 28th, actually, on Sky Documentaries and Now TV via Altitude Films is where you'll get it. I'm staying with you, John, for Stray, which focuses on the street dogs of Istanbul and the city's long relationship with its canine citizens. It's an extraordinary subject for a documentary, and not a word spoken by any of the dogs.
No, this documentary is from is from first-time director Elizabeth Lowe, who's actually from Hong Kong, a Hong Kong American, and it opens with a quote from Diogenes of Sinope, which is worth repeating. He's a dog person from 360 BC that says, "Humans live artificially and hypocritically and would do well to study the dog." And there's further nuggets of canine wisdom. But the film really is a dog's eye view of life on the streets of Istanbul. We follow three stray dogs, the leader's 18, Nazar, and the puppy Kartal. And the film is about the relationship that forms between the dogs and three homeless teenage refugees from Syria, Jamil, Halil, and Ali, who call themselves Turkmen from Aleppo, and they're sleeping on a building site and spending their days walking the streets looking for money and sniffing glue. And the Turks have a rule. There's a law in Turkey that says you cannot in any way interfere with or injure a stray dog, but they don't have the same rules or the same approach to refugees fleeing war, and that contrast is really at the heart of the film.
What about that aspect of no narration? I know we get snatches of conversations from people walking past, and we get news reports and things like that. So it's not that you're left totally without words, but there's no narration. Could you follow it?
I could. There's a lot of handheld and at times paw-held photography. She follows these dogs literally over the course of what's an artificial day, really, from day to night. But it's reminiscent of, there was a smash hit documentary from 2016 called Katie, which is about the hundreds of thousands of stray cats that roam freely around Istanbul. But where that was a very slick production that doubled as a travelogue for what is a beautiful city. Mm. And they anthropomorphized the cats. Her film is more ragged and real, and she doesn't do any of that anthropomorphizing. She leaves the dogs be dogs and films it from their point of view. Right. She's more interested in analysing how we treat animals and how we treat other people than in putting human emotions onto the animals.
Stars, John?
So, 3 for me. It doesn't really work. I mean, Katie, it was a lovely film, and it's hard not to make the comparison between the two.
All right.
But there are points in this film where you think, okay, I get it, and we need to move on, and it doesn't move.
Okay.
It stays quite still, but...
Sounds like a bit of a cat
really
person.
A really interesting idea.
Yeah, sounds like a cat person, dog person debate there as
well. There's an argument there,
Available on video on demand platforms, including IFI at Home for Stray. And finally then, Memories of My Father, based on a true story. This one, Angela, you saw this one for us. Hector Abad Gomez, Columbian University professor who challenges the country's establishment. Is it a name that would be well known outside of Columbia, Gomez?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, I wonder how well known he is by the younger generation of Colombians, because Colombia has a history of kind of airbrushing people out of it, perhaps because culturally it's too painful and dangerous to remember people who stood up to the authorities in Colombia and who fell foul of them. Hector Abad Gomez was a doctor and, as you say, a university medical professor. He was assassinated in 1987 by Marxist guerrillas after years of being accused of being a Marxist and a communist himself by the government and by the church, who wouldn't have supported him. And basically was a campaigner for vaccine justice and for healthcare for poorer people and access to clean drinking water to try and wipe out all of these awful diseases that Colombia still had long after the rest of the developed world, you know, polio, typhoid, all of that. And so he was assassinated in 1987. So it's based on the memoir by his son, Hector Abad Faciolince, I think is how you pronounce his name, who's quite a well-known Colombian writer. He's a novelist. And so he wrote his memoir in 2006 for the purpose of you know, preserving his father's memory so that people would not forget. And I'm this, just, I'm this just keen, film is based on that.
And I'm just keen that we clarify, be clear that this is a feature film. It's not a documentary. It's a feature film. It's a told story, if you like, a fictionalized version of the life. Javier Cámara plays the character of Héctor Abad Gómez. What did you think of his performance? What does he bring to this doctor?
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I really like this actor. I mean, people might know him from Almodovar's movies, Habla con Ella and Bad Education. He was in The Young Pope as well as the confessor cardinal in that. He's a great actor. He's got a lovely physicality to him. And I thought he really, you know, I got a very strong sense of the character of Héctor Abad Gómez, you know, just very smiley. He lights up the screen. His affection for his children, in particular the son who, you know, it's the son's perspective that we see all of the action through. But the relationship, the father's relationship, you know, really, really believable as this sort of, you know, very smart, very principled man, but also a real family man. And he really embodied that quite well. I liked him a lot.
And there are two timelines here, which is reflected in the way that the director, Fernando Trueba, tells the story, parts of it in colour, parts of it in black and white. That's straightforward. That tells us what timeline we're in, I guess, does it?
It does, yeah. The boyhood memories from the 1970s, which are the idyllic family, you know, sort of, there's five girls in the family and just the one boy, and you know, the mother and father have a very loving relationship. They're all shot in colour, and it's a very hazy kind of rose tinted honeyed colour, looks quite nostalgic in 70s. And then the later ones in the 80s, where the political unrest is really ramping up, those one that part and those scenes are in black and white, and they look a little bit like newsreel or documentary, which kind of, you can understand why Trueba would have made this decision for that. I'm just not sure how well it works. And also the film opens in Italy in black and white in 1987, which I felt was a really, really weak decision, because I was thinking, is this in Italy, or where are we in Colombia?
Then, do we get away from the Colombian stereotypes, drug dealing, violence, etc., and give us stars at the end of that, answering that, if you would, Angela?
I think that was his intention where he opens initially, because it's the narrator, or the, you know, the prospective character who is at a movie which is really violent. It's kind of like a Latino slasher movie, and he's complaining to his girlfriend that this is how, you know, Hispanic culture is represented. But I kind of feel that if someone asked me how is Hispanic culture represented on film, I would say it's sentimental. It's all about Catholicism and family. And that's what this film has got heaps of.
Right.
So it kind of felt like this, you know, there's two cliches going on here. I liked this film. I think it's a really important, it's a very relevant film now. Our conversations about vaccines, Colombia, lo and behold, does not have a COVID vaccine. And, you know, the character actually made me think of Dr. Noel Brown in Ireland.
Ah, right.
So I thought, who's going to make a movie about him? Because that would be a really interesting movie.
Certainly
I was interested in the topic. I'm interested in Colombia, so I'm giving it 3 stars, but I think a lot of people would find this difficult to stick with.
3 stars with that caveat from Angela. Memories of My Father, the title of that film. Before that, we talked about Stray with John Maguire, and with both Angela and John, Tina and Amamite were the previous films we spoke about as well.